Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. Our conversation today will focus back in on the U.S. financials as we will examine recent performance within the group, along with the implications of rising rates, some notable themes within this space, and more. So joining me here on the line this morning for the conversation, glad to welcome back to the podcast, Brad Ball, Financials Analyst Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. So, Brad, good morning to you. Welcome back to the podcast and looking forward to our conversation today.
Yeah, good morning, Dan. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So, Brad, I recall we last spoke, I believe it was the tail end of 2020. So, picking back up from that December conversation, heading into 2021, you had a moderately preferred view on the U.S. financials. So, as a starting point, can you remind our listeners of the factors behind that thesis and maybe speak to how the group has performed over the past couple of months?
Sure. So, thank you, Dan. And we do continue to have a moderately preferred view for U.S. financials. To your question, coming into this year, we saw really three key pillars to outperformance for the group. That would include an improving macro backdrop, a stabilizing to improving earnings outlook, and an environment that would generally be conducive to opportunistic and proactive capital return. Now, with respect to the macro picture, we expect ongoing fiscal and monetary policy to spur an economic rebound in the second half of this year. And we do think that policy will continue to generally support higher long-term interest rates, as we've already seen so far this year. On the earnings outlook, following a brutal year in 2020, when virtually every aspect of financials intermediation practices was negatively impacted by the pandemic, it now looks like the pre-provision earnings outlook for the group should stabilize maybe in this quarter or next quarter and rebound in the second half. And then finally, with respect to capital return, you know, we do expect that buybacks, which were green-lighted by the Fed last December after having been put on hold a year ago March, we do expect that buybacks will resume. They have resumed here this quarter and accelerate later this year, along with the potential for dividend increases in the second half of 2021, given that the group has significant excess capital, which has proven to be more sufficient than would be needed in a pandemic type scenario. So, you know, I would point out that there are some risks that we're watching for. Of course, the macro uncertainty around the pandemic and the vaccine rollout that's still out there, and reopening delays could potentially derail or slow this progress to some extent. I do think that there is a policy overhang. We think that the regulatory environment under the new administration could swing back against the group somewhat, but that probably doesn't happen right away, maybe not until next year. And so it's not an immediate concern, but something to watch for. And then credit, you know, we are experiencing better than expected credit quality, which I'll talk about in more detail, but there is some uncertainty as to what kind of credit losses will likely emerge in a post-pandemic experience, which we haven't obviously gone through. So I'm watchful here over the next quarter or two for potential earnings disappointments that could cause some temporary pressure on the group. But like I said, I continue to have a moderately most preferred view for the next 12 months.
Well, Brad, thank you for providing that performance update and hitting on some of those risks to get things started. And we'll dive into some of those topics in more detail in a few moments. I do want to circle back and get your thoughts on current valuations. I know towards the beginning of the year here, asset price inflation has been a point of interest or perhaps concern for investors, maybe in other sectors more so than others. But Brad, specific to U.S. financials, where do valuations stand relative to the broader markets?
Yes, and we have seen strong outperformance in U.S. financials so far this year. The group is up 13% versus the S&P 500, up about 2%. And the valuation gap that really widened out significantly last year has narrowed somewhat. On a P.E. basis, on a relative P.E. Price-to-earnings basis, Financials currently trade around 65 to 70% of the market multiple. They typically trade about 75 to 80% of the S&P PE. So still a discount to where they've traded historically, but again, that discount has narrowed to some extent. Now, a lot of the recent outperformance, I do think, is a bounce back after last year's significant underperformance. And I do believe the scope of the upside potential from here is likely lower than when we first moved to our moderately preferred view on U.S. financials back in October. But I do think the upside remains attractive over the next 12 months.
Thank you for that, Brad. Another item I want to get your thoughts on, we've been very much monitoring the recent uptick in bond yields, which has resulted in some volatile market conditions, broadly speaking, over the past couple of weeks. I look at the 10-year Treasury yield this morning. It's at a 1.48. What are the implications, Brad, of rising rates to the group?
Yeah, and that's up from less than 1% on the 10-year Treasury yields right around year-end. So we've seen a significant spike in long-term rates. And generally speaking, financials do benefit from rising rates and an acceleration in inflation expectations. Financial shares are highly correlated with rates and the steepening of the yield curve, which is what we've experienced so far this year. There's really two ways that rates impact financials, right? One is directly and the other indirectly. In terms of directly, banks' net interest income, it comprises about two-thirds of revenues, is directly impacted by higher rates that can be passed on through higher yields on loans and investments that the banks make. Generally speaking, banks are asset sensitive. That means they have more assets to reprice in the short term than liabilities. So when short term rates are rising, loan yields go up and interest margins rise. Now, the greatest near term leverage is to short rates, as they say, because loans do reprice on short market rates like LIBOR and Prime. But higher long term rates are also positive because they are generally indicative of the market's expectation for rising inflation and increasing economic growth. So here, there's an indirect benefit. If long-term rates are high and it means the economy is likely to grow, you would expect that financials will experience stronger client engagement, stronger loan demand, better credit quality. So all of these things could be supportive of financials, both revenue picture and credit picture, if the rate scenario continues toward the rising and steepening that we've seen so far this year.
Thank you for the color on rates, Brad. Very helpful given what we've seen unfold over the past couple of weeks. So I do want to take a moment to reflect back on the Q4 reporting season for a few moments. From your vantage point, Brad, how did they measure up relative to your expectations heading into the reporting? And any insights, Brad, from what you've heard in terms of tone, sentiment from managements on the current environment? I know it remains challenging in some respects, as well as the prospects for earnings growth in coming quarters.
Yeah, so the fourth quarter earnings per share were beating expectations virtually across the board for large cap financials. A lot of the beats were largely driven by better credit quality, with loan loss provisions coming in below the levels that had been seen in the first and second quarters of last year, as the outlook for loan losses improved as the year wound down. So again, a lot driven by lower than expected credit losses. But there also was some upside due to improved capital markets and other fee income activities like mortgage banking. But unfortunately, the core earnings remain challenged by the low rates. As I mentioned a minute ago, low rates did have a depressing impact on net interest margins. And we also saw relatively lower loan demand in the quarter as households and business borrowers were relatively flush with cash. I think due to the government payments and the PPP loans and programs that supported both consumers and businesses last year. In terms of the commentary from managements on the outlook, we did hear on the earnings calls, I would say, a positive tone, despite the fact that guidance for 2021 has generally been unchanged from where it was a quarter ago. The modest tweaks that we've seen lower in net interest income have been offset by higher trading and investment banking. So from a revenue standpoint, like I said, really unchanged in terms of guidance. And the most important sort of expense driver to consider is provision expense. And it does appear that the credit outlook is much better, keeps getting much better than last year's worst case outlook. So, you know, we do think that earnings will stabilize here in the first and second quarter. And based on management's guidance, we think there could be significant release of credit reserves, lower provisioning again, which could help fund share repurchases and stronger EPS growth in the second half of 2021.
Okay, well, Brad, appreciate those reflections and that earnings outlook. It's always helpful as well to hear what's on the minds of management. So thank you for taking our listeners through that. I do want to circle back on a couple of themes that we've previously spoken about on the Top of the Morning podcast, one of them being the rise of fintech, a theme which is outlined in the Chief Investment Office's recently published Year Ahead publication, as well as the consolidation of regional banks as well as asset managers. So specific to those two themes, Brad, how do you see those playing out over the course of 2021?
Sure. So, you know, we continue to see technology-driven innovation across broad segments of financial services companies and the ecosystem broadly. You know, new products and services like person-to-person payments, so-called P2P, buy now, pay later, point-of-sale lending products, cryptocurrency-funded deposits. These are all helping make financial services more convenient and more accessible, and we do think that trend will continue over 2021. Technology is also, I think, importantly playing a big role behind the scenes. Financial services companies continue to invest heavily in digitalization, cloud-based data management, in all things that are essentially helping make them operate more efficiently with fewer errors and offer more convenience on the front end. Now, I do expect that we will see a lot more headlines about emerging fintech companies. We've already seen, you know, quite a bit of talk about, you know, potential disruptors in the marketplace. They're proliferating, you know, I think because of the opportunity to tap into the underbanked or the unbanked marketplace as they seek to democratize finance. But I would note that the incumbent financial firms are in a good position to compete with these emerging disruptors, partner with these firms. I do expect they will continue to consolidate in order to achieve the scale to compete with these firms. And to your point about regional bank consolidation, you know, we've already seen some deals so far this year and last year that had been, at least in part, spurred by the desire to achieve scale sufficient to distribute the significant technology investment that's necessary to keep pace with the market's demand. So we do think regional bank combinations and asset manager and discount broker acquisitions are likely to remain front and center here in 2021. We'll be watching for that as deals are largely driven by a combination of a desire to achieve economies through consolidation, but also to achieve, as I said, the scale necessary to distribute a significant technology investment into the future.
Okay, well, Brad, thank you for the updates on those themes and what we might expect to see materialize over the course of this year. So two themes we'll continue to track very closely. I know we're beginning to come to the end of our time together this morning. So as a closing point, just given where valuations stand today, Brad, coupled with the prospects for an economic recovery here in the U.S., how should investors think about positioning within U.S. financials at this time?
Yeah, I continue to believe that exposure to the U.S. consumer-driven economy, the economic rebound will be key to outperformance going forward. You know, the macro backdrop that I think will unfold here with vaccines, with stimulus, with ongoing reopenings, it's bound to spur a surge in economic activity, and especially among consumers. I think there's pent-up demand for things like travel, to eat at restaurants, to attend events. And I think these things will help drive higher card volumes, higher consumer loans broadly. So, as I mentioned earlier, it will help from a credit quality standpoint to the extent that it helps drive down unemployment. So I do prefer consumer-oriented banks and diversified financials, but I would also say that a continuation of above-average capital markets activities, we've seen corporates and other businesses broadly seek to merge more. So merger and acquisition advice from investment banks and others will be key. We've also seen significant issuance in the equity capital markets arena, and trading activity continues to run at relatively high levels, I think, due to a lot of the uncertainty in the marketplace, again, in a post-pandemic environment. So to that end, in addition to the consumer-focused financials, I do prefer the less short-term rate-sensitive companies like investment banks. They've got capital markets and M&A that should benefit. And I also prefer asset and wealth managers, which should feel less pressure from the Fed keeping rates lower for longer. So I do think there's opportunities. And circling back to where we started the conversation, we have a moderately most preferred view. While I don't think we necessarily go up in a straight line, I do expect U.S. financials to outperform over the next 12 months. And as I say, I would be selective in picking companies oriented toward the consumer, as well as those in the investment banking, the wealth and asset management areas, I think could be the biggest beneficiaries.
Well, Brad, very productive conversation this morning. And thank you for covering all of the ground that you did with our clients and listeners. So looking forward to tracking performance in the group, the themes you highlighted for us today, and having follow-up conversations throughout the year. But Brad, thank you again for your time and insights today. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Dan. It was a pleasure.
Likewise. Thank you, Brad. And again, today we have been joined by Brad Ball, financials analyst for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. As a reminder to our clients and listeners, the UBS Chief Investment Office authors a variety of publications and blogs that touch on timely market developments, asset classes, and portfolio allocation. These resources can be located on ubs.com/CIO. And for clients of UBS, you can also contact your financial advisor if you would like to learn more or receive a copy of any of the publications or blogs directly. Top of the Morning is part of the UBS Market Moves podcast channel, which is available where podcasts are found, including on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Pandora. Visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire podcast offering, as well as the new UBS Trending video series. From UBS Studios, I'm Dan Cassidy. Thank you for joining us.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.